Up WHD2 Chippewa Falls, W228EP Eau Claire,
and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Monica Ricks. Tornadoes have killed at least 11 people, including children, in Oklahoma, Arkansas, and Texas this weekend, and that number continues climbing. This man's in Sanger, Texas, where storms leveled businesses.
Knowing that I was just here and it's all destroyed, it's like a punch to the stomach, really. I mean, this is my community. This is the, I know people that work here.
In Oklahoma, KOTV's Kristen Weaver reports widespread damage.
Talked to a homeowner who says that they were watching the weather on their phone last night. They ended up getting in their bathroom, hunkering down. Two young kiddos, thankfully, they are all okay. But part of their roof is gone. There's windows smashed.
Hundreds of thousands of people still don't have power. And that same system is now impacting other central U.S. states, including Indiana. The Indy 500 not expected to get underway now until at least 3 p.m. Eastern due to severe thunderstorms and lightning. Donald Trump's not happy with libertarians in D.C.
The audience was divided. Many supporters were there wearing Make America Great hats and T-shirts, while others booed Trump repeatedly. The loudest heckling came when he said this.
Nominate Trump for president of the United States. Whoa. That's nice. That's nice.
Stacy Lynn, CBS News, Washington.
The Libertarian Party's expected to select its nominee today. It picked Joe Jorgensen, who earned just 1% of the popular vote back in 2020. Some Republicans continue butting heads with the Biden administration over immigration reform. Texas Republican Congressman Tony Gonzalez talked about it today on Face the Nation.
The president has not had any real conversations with anyone in the House. The Senate, yes, they've sat down, they've had these conversations, but in the House, they've given no oxygen to it.
The Senate shot down a bill last week for a second time that would have limited southern border crossings. Emergency crews rushed to Dublin Airport overnight after 12 people were injured in severe turbulence on a Qatar Airways flight. This woman was on board.
It was quite scary. The plane just seemed to go stop, but then dropped, quite a severe drop. And then fortunately, the captain got it under control.
The incident comes a week after a British man died on a turbulent flight from London to Singapore. About 50 people had to be hospitalized.
Yes! Yes!
And curse broken for Ferrari driver Charles Leclerc, who finally won his hometown race, the Monaco Grand Prix, today after several years of attempts. It's actually his first Formula One victory in nearly 2 years. This is CBS News.
Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get the parts and service you need fast from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
This is your hometown radio, refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Experts say black voters in Wisconsin could hold the keys to the White House in November. Alex Gonzalez has more on a growing and changing key voting bloc.
Rashawn Ray with the Brookings Institution says contrary to a popular misconception, black voters are not a monolith and do turn out to vote, with 2024 being no exception.
Oftentimes they are choosing between the lesser of two evils because we have an overly simplistic two-party system. And then the other part of this, there are some people who would rather stay at home than vote for someone who they don't think aligns with their particular politics and their cultural values.
Ray says the narrative that black people don't vote is simply not true. Eligible black voters stand out for higher turnout rates than their Latino and Asian counterparts, according to Pew Research Center. They also tend to be younger than voters overall, with about 60% of eligible black voters being under the age of 50. Project director with the nonprofit organization Black Girls Vote, Ashley C.J. Daniels, calls black women a powerhouse behind Democratic Party wins and adds that many have gotten politically engaged, especially since 2020. But she adds that researchers like her know there is what she calls an enthusiasm gap in the 2024 election.
Looking at some of, like, you know, the data, you have, you know, numerous reasons why that there is an enthusiasm gap. You have, you know, some black folks that are concerned about the ceasefire, you know, that's going on in Gaza. And you have some black folks that are concerned about reproductive justice. You have others that are concerned about economics. So there's like a variance.
Daniel says it's important politicians understand that the black vote is more complex than was previously considered. Black voters hold a range of ideologies, including conservative views, that account for about 10% of Black voters consistently voting for Republican candidates. I'm Alex Gonzalez. Support for this reporting was provided by the Carnegie Corporation of New York.
This is Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. We'll see some shower chances for today. There could be some heavy rainfall at spots. Otherwise, we'll see highs in the lower 60s. Southeast winds will turn to the northeast. Tonight, skies will turn mostly clear, lows dropping to the upper 40s. It's 57 at our studios.
Pat Kreitlow.
On Monday's Best of Up North News Radio, having to bail our fast-growing lawns, and how people who differ on abortion can have civil conversations.
Up North News with Pat Kreitlow, weekday mornings starting at 6. You're listening to 93.5 The Tap.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome to our weekly weekend venued broadcast here on the stations of Civic Media throughout the state of Wisconsin, and yes, beyond Wisconsin too. My name is Jim Santel, and I am your on-air host for the next 2 hours here on our Civic Media broadcast. We call it Amicus, a law review. As you know well, this weekend venued weekly review takes its name from our adopted and our embraced commission here on these stations of Civic Media. That's to conduct a review, an examination, some analysis, some deliberation of the recent news of our times in our state, in our nation, and in our world. Areas of law and government and the aspiration for justice. Amicus, as you know now, a legal term. It's derived from the Latin. It is meant to describe a friend, thus the core word there, ami, A-M-I, an individual or an organization that assists and promotes in some kind of understanding, some sort of appreciation of the relevant issues or of attention or some resolution by some entity, some court, some organization of some kind. And in that effort, that understanding, that appreciation, promoting all of that, focusing on those relevant issues, we offer information, some insight, some perspective, and maybe even some expertise along the way. That is indeed all our mission. That's our purpose. That's our goal on this weekly weekend broadcast that, yes, indeed, also involves you every weekend. And you are our listeners. We value and cherish your contributions to Amicus Law Review every single weekend. We encourage you to call in at 844-967-2789. That number once again is 844-967-2789. Or you can also text us. You can drop a note into our feed on the Civic Media app. And Max and I, Max is my spectacular producer here in the studios of Civic Media. And together we're going to get your inquiries and your questions about the rule of law-related topics of our day, the justice-related issues, your inquiries, the things that have you puzzled in the course of our syllabus. And what is our syllabus for this weekend, this Memorial Day weekend, about which we will talk later as well? What is our agenda? What is our discussion set of topics? Well, that agenda for this edition of Amicus, a Law Review, includes a number of late-breaking stories, but also things promised from our previous broadcast. Yes, that's right. At the end of our broadcast last weekend, I promised that we would take up and review again the issues related to Associate Justice Sam Alito. We began with some discussion last week about this flag issue, this upside-down flag issue, aggravated just this past week. Yes, there's more news in connection with a second flag flying at a second home of his. We'll talk about the news story there. I want to talk about the ethics aspects of that at the top of this, our first hour of this weekend broadcast. And then we're also going to go beyond that to talk about what I'm going to describe to all of you as the cynicism and the contempt of this associate justice for the basic trappings of our government, of institutions like voting and polling, institutions like, yes, the Supreme Court, the grand jury process, the process of jurors coming in and making determinations, prosecutors, judges, the very systems and organizations that he is supposed to, and has taken an oath to support and defend. We'll talk about all of that. We'll talk about that not only in connection with these flags, which is critical, but we're going to go back and talk about other things that Associate Justice Sam Alito has written into the law of our nation. We're going to go back to a case called Brnovich and a major case, a decision by the Supreme Court under the Voting Rights Act. We're going to talk also about some of the language he used in overturning Roe versus Wade a couple of years ago in a case called Dobbs. And then we're going to especially focus on something he did just 1 month ago, and that is his examination of the lawyers during the course of the oral argument on the challenge by Donald Trump to the prosecution against him in Washington, D.C. This challenge based upon the notion, the silly, the frivolous, the absolutely absurd and dangerous notion that somehow a chief executive in our nation has immunity. We're going to talk about what the associate justice, his name once again, Sam Alito, said in response to, in engagement with, the attorney for the government, having to do with the legitimacy of the basic trappings of our country. The basic trappings of government and operation, including, again, the processes inside the court system, which he himself is not only a part of, but stands virtually at the top of. We're going to talk about Sam Alito and what has to happen. We're going to talk about what has happened just in the past couple of days, the response by Congress and indeed by the chair of the Senate Judiciary Committee. His name is Dick Durbin. We'll talk about what he has invited to happen, which is a meeting. You can tell by the way I describe that is plainly not enough, but some response by the Congress to what has happened in connection with the flags. My advocacy this morning on Amicus is there are issues much beyond the flag that reveal an associate justice who does, in fact, have contempt, hugely cynical for the very trappings of our government, and that Sam Alito should no longer be an associate justice of our Supreme Court, deciding cases on the very issues that he is apparently advocating for through those flags. But beyond that, exhibiting on a routine basis in his writings and the things that he says, so much contempt, so much cynicism that a Supreme Court justice can no longer impartially and without bias rule on the facts and the law of our nation. Sam Alito should no longer be on the Supreme Court. That is the advocacy which you will hear from me this weekend as we go forward on Amicus Law Review. We have also got another connection with Sam Alito, which we're going to chat about this weekend, and that is one of the major decisions issued by the Supreme Court just this past week. Yes, that's right. We are now in that period about which we have spoken a lot on this weekend broadcast. That is this time period in late May into June, maybe into July as well, but certainly the next 4 or 5, maybe 6 weeks at the outside, in which the Supreme Court, the United States Supreme Court, including Samuel Alito, among the members of 9 altogether there, Sam Alito and others, issuing opinions in major, major cases having to do with social media and guns. And yes, Trump immunity and another issue related to the legitimacy of the indictment against him. All those kinds of cases and more, especially involving agency deference, all those cases to be decided in the weeks just ahead, thus animating a lot of our future syllabuses and agendas on this program, especially this weekend, focusing on this major gerrymandering voting rights case under the Equal Protection Clause of the Constitution of the United States of America, coming out of South Carolina and finding that the decision by the legislature there to gerrymander a particular district, it's the first district, it's along the coastline there in South Carolina, that particular district was not gerrymandered for racial purposes, but rather for partisan political purposes, something that, again, in the jurisprudence of our nation is permitted now. And based upon that, permitting this particular district to go ahead and basically disenfranchise significant portions of the population, the black population in South Carolina, in such a way that the Equal Protection Clause, according to the Supreme Court, the majority, and yes, indeed, Sam Alito, is not offended by that provision in our Constitution, not in violation of the Equal Protection Clause. Nonetheless, we're going to talk a lot about that decision by the Supreme Court. It is undeniably a loss when it comes to identifying voting and the possibility, the prospects for always ensuring that people who are legitimately voting have the opportunity to do so and to elect people of their choosing. This is a setback, undeniably, in the wake of a couple of other recent decisions indicating that maybe, just maybe, the Supreme Court might be inclined to encourage and advance the interests of voting rights. This past week in this South Carolina case, which we will talk about in some detail, in great detail. We're going to go through what Sam Alito wrote on behalf of the 6-member majority in that case, talk about his findings, talk about his basically substituting his in a what's called a de novo review of what happened below, substituting his view of the evidence and going into great detail in a nearly 40-page opinion about why it is the lower courts that had found that indeed there was inappropriate, unconstitutional gerrymandering that disenfranchises a major portion of the population there. I'm going to talk about the basis for that. And then we're also going to talk about two other significant aspects that also have to be discussed in the discussion groups of America across our nation, including right here in Wisconsin and in our neighboring states and listening states throughout the nation. And that is an incredible concurrence, if you will, of another associate justice. His name, of course, he is Clarence Thomas. We have heard from him before. Invoking principles in his concurrence. Actually, it's partially a dissent. He says, I disagree with a portion of the majority opinion. But the most significant thing coming out of his writing that accompanies this major decision, again, finding no gerrymandering, no racial problem in South Carolina, is that he doubts now the efficacy of efforts in the wake of Brown versus Board of Education, 1954, the efforts to enforce that. He suggests that we should turn back the clock, and we'll read from exactly what he says in the course of his opinion. And then very significantly, we're going to spend a lot of time talking about the major dissent written by Elena Kagan, but also joined in by the two other justices who, again, typically fall on that side of the jurisprudential aisle. That is Ketanji Brown Jackson and, of course, Sonia Sotomayor, a compelling piece of writing that takes apart the majority opinion and says, you know what? You know what? The lower courts got it right. And we're going to talk this weekend about a concept called clear error analysis. Clear error analysis, in which the courts, traditionally appellate courts, defer to a lower court's finding, a lower court that has had the benefit of hearing the witnesses and reviewing the documents, doing all the things as happened here, an extensive trial. I'm going to talk about that as well and the compelling nature of what Elena Kagan wrote in response, in strong objection, in dissent to this major opinion. And then we're also going to talk about what happened in Louisiana this past week. That is the decision by the legislature there to effectively classify mifepristone as a regulated or controlled substance. We're going to talk about why that's so important, even as the Supreme Court, among the cases coming up, has that very issue also on its docket. All of that coming up on our weekend broadcast here on Amicus Law Review, the broadcast stations of Civic Media. Stay with me, stay with Max for all of that discussion coming up.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap, the Chippewa Valley's home for Matinee on Air.
Hey there, it's Carrie Joy with your Work Money Minute and a surefire savings tip for the next time you have to buy a car. The move? Getting pre-approved for an auto loan from your bank or credit union before you head to the dealership. If your credit score is reasonable, your bank is probably going to pre-approve your loan. And bonus, this puts you in the driver's seat when you're talking about a car loan from the dealership. Car dealers love to try to get you to take a more expensive loan or a longer loan. That makes them more money, you know? But when you walk in with a pre-approved loan, they will usually work to offer you an even better rate than the bank. That's what happened to me. And my car, which I am paying off at a brag-worthy 2.4% interest rate, is proof that this approach works. For more tips on saving more and spending less, text MONEY, M-O-N-E-Y, to 88285. That's text MONEY, M-O-N-E-Y, to 88285. Till next time, I'm Carrie Joy saying take good care.
This is 93.5 The Tap.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
This is Amicus Law Review. My name is Jim Santel. I'm your host this hour and next hour on our weekend review of justice-related issues. We are beginning at the top of our expansive but achievable syllabus on this weekend broadcast, talking about Samuel Alito. The entire nation is talking about Samuel Alito. It is plainly relevant to an understanding not only of our Supreme Court, the work that it does, but his involvement in some major decisions pending right now on the docket of the Supreme Court to be decided in the next 5 to 6 weeks. That's arguably the narrow reason why these flags that are flying over his home in Alexandria, Virginia, and yet at his vacation home as well, that's why they are so very important. Going to be spending some time as well chatting beyond the flags about the other things that this associate justice has said and done in recent years that tell us an awful lot about him and reveal his incapacity to serve any further as a Supreme Court justice on our highest court. Let us go back and put the predicates, the factual predicates for this, all back in place. We know well that Sam Alito, along with his wife, have a home. Their principal home is in Alexandria, Virginia. It is just across the river from where the associate justice works with the chief justice and seven others on the Supreme Court. He lives there with his wife, and we know that the upside-down flag, the United States flag, was flying there on January 17th of 2021. Some neighbors have provided copies of that photograph to the New York Times, which has, of course, been producing that picture, sending it around in other media outlets throughout the past couple of weeks. The image is stunning, principally because by showing that upside-down flag, the United States flag, it is a signal that the people who are flagging it, putting it up there, the people who are promoting this concept, are indeed supportive of Donald Trump. The supporters of his who have been arguing through the use of that flag and obviously in many other ways, much beyond that, that the voting that resulted in the election of Joe Biden and the rejection of Donald Trump's candidacy was fraudulent. And that upside down flag, a United States flag, is being viewed as and has been adopted by those people as the Stop the Steal symbol on display. Suggesting again that the 2020 election was stolen, a position that we know is untrue. It is factually untrue. More than 60 courts have made that determination. The flag, again, which was flying in above the associate justice's home for several days, perhaps, on January 17th of 2021, sometime right before the inauguration of President Joe Biden, shortly after the insurrection at the Capitol, and again, even at that time, while the Supreme Court was contending with whether to hear a 2020 election case, all of that focusing on what Sam Alito is doing. Now, as we said last time, as you have heard, the associate justice has denied any complicity in this, said, nope, this is not me. He said, I had no involvement whatsoever in the flying of the upside-down flag. It was briefly placed by Mrs. Alito, his spouse, in response to a neighbor's use of objectionable and personally insulting language on yard signs. So what does that tell us? It tells us that we know that he understands that the upside-down flag should not have been there. That's my wife, he says. That's what she did. I have no involvement in that. Because he understands implicitly by sending that message, he is supporting a partisan view, a political view, a view, frankly, that is completely factually unsupported, that indeed the 2020 election was stolen, that the Stop the Steal people on January 6th and even since that time are somehow right when in fact they are wrong, and that partisan view, that political view that others may have in the United States, even though, again, it is unsupported, it is a frivolous and completely unfounded position to take. Nonetheless, if you're in the private sector and want to maintain that, you've got that right under our First Amendment to do it. As an associate justice of the Supreme Court, where you're deciding cases having to do with the 2020 election, having to do with the insurrection on January 6th of 2021, when you do that, you not only compromise your impartiality, but you send a message to the entire world, the entire nation, all the people looking at the Supreme Court as this bastion of non-bias and of impartial review of issues, that you, in fact, are biased, that you've got this presupposition that the people who advocate that the 2020 election was stolen are right. You support them by virtue of putting that stop the steal sign in your yard, that upside down flag. Indeed, we know. We know that the upside down flag for many, many years was used as a symbol of emergency and distress. It was first used as a military SOS. Historians will confirm all of that. But in recent decades, once again, it has increasingly been used as a political protest symbol and a very controversial one most recently, because of this continuing sense that somehow the 2020 election was stolen, being used as a symbol that indeed the stealing of the election has to be stopped and overturned. Sam Alito basically now endorsing that position even as he is deciding past cases, and as we know, present cases, one of them involving whether or not Donald Trump should be immune for his part in what happened on January 6th. Also, this other related charge under Section 1512 of Title 18, whether or not that statute can form a basis for those who rioted on the Capitol grounds on that day. That statute also the predicate for two of the four charges against Donald Trump. All those issues pending before the Supreme Court right now, pending before, among others, Samuel Alito. Now, beyond the flying of that flag upside down in Alexandria, Virginia, just this past week, we got more. We got more because in the wake of our program, our broadcast last weekend, we got even more information that last summer, 2 years after the upside down flag was flown outside his Virginia home, Sam Alito, using another provocative symbol, was also sending the same kinds of message. This time, it was something called the Appeal to Heaven flag, which, like the United States inverted flag, was carried by rioters at the Capitol on January 6th. It's also known as the Pine Tree flag, dates back to the Revolutionary War, but fell into obscurity once again until recent years, once again resurrected as a symbol of support for former President Donald Trump and a religious strand of the Stop the Steal campaign for this push, this initiative to remake American government in Christian terms, advocated by many Christian nationalists. Photographs, again, from the New York Times, along with accounts of neighbors from that area, passersby in the area. The Alito home on the Long Beach Island in July and September of 2023, less than a year ago. All of that show that symbol, once again, that provocative flag being flown at the home of Sam Alito, once again underscoring that maybe it wasn't just his wife, and that this notion of pointing to your wife and suggesting that you know it's wrong, well, he's gone quiet. He's gone quiet on this because we've got a second indication of his bias. And all of that, again, in the midst of this time when he is going to be ruling on, probably right now, reviewing final drafts of orders, majority opinions, maybe dissents, maybe concurrences, in these major cases that could scuttle some of the very charges against Donald Trump, this immunity issue, this statutory issue, also making decisions about whether or not literally hundreds of people who were charged by the D.C. U.S. Attorney's Office, suffering prosecutions to this point, some of them spending times in prison, whether that action is also legitimate, he is deciding all of that. I'm going to talk more about why the flag is important, why the ethics issues are important, and then delve deeper into Sam Alito, who should no longer be on our United States Supreme Court.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap, Eau Claire, the Valley's home of Nightlight with Pete Schwabe.
CBS News Brief. Storms have now killed at least 15 people in Texas, Arkansas, and Oklahoma. Mayor Debbie Long talked about the damage in Claremore.
Huge trees uprooted, electric lines and poles across the streets, trees on houses.
Hundreds of thousands of people don't have power today as intense heat rolls into the region. Florida Republican Mike Waltz says Democrat and Republican veterans in Congress kept tradition and cleaned up the Vietnam War Memorial for Memorial Day.
I saw the acrimony and the infighting, and I said, you know, let's get a group of veterans together, people who really have skin in the game. I think that's important for the American people to see.
Ceasefire talks are expected to resume soon in the Middle East following new attacks from Hamas in Israel. Reporter Yotem Comfino.
The indirect talks will resume next week, according to Israeli media. But with Hamas unwilling to compromise on core demands, expectations remain low.
CBS News Brief. I'm Monica Ricks.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
A new plan for pitching. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports from Fenway Park in Boston, where the Brewers won two games using a unique plan on the mound. Instead of a starter for two consecutive days, the Brewers began the game with lefty reliever Jared Koenig in the first inning to face the top of the Red Sox batting order. That featured three out of four left-handed batters. The Brewers coaching staff came up with the idea, preparing for the series. Is it unique? Pat Murphy.
I think it happens a lot. You know, a starter gives you a good start, and a reliever comes in and gives you an inning and a third, that we just did it reverse. Mm-hmm. So I don't think it's like a magical plan that, you know, it's everybody has kind of the same plan, you know. Using an opener is not anything new. It's just something that we chose to do with this lineup.
The crew went on to beat the Red Sox 7-2 Friday, 6-3 on Saturday. On Monday, Memorial Day, they open up a four-game home series against the Chicago Cubs in a battle for the NL Central. With the Brewers from Fenway Park, with sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. For tonight, becoming partly cloudy with lows in the upper 40s. Chance of a shower or a thunderstorm on your Memorial Day, mostly cloudy, 69. For Monday night, mostly cloudy and a low around 50. Some showers and thunderstorms possible Tuesday, highs in the mid-60s. For Wednesday, sunny and 70.
It's 57 at our studios.
The Todd Albaugh Show.
The fantastic Jane Matt Nair of Matt Nair on Air. I'm a big fan of like the Rose Bowl, the Orange Bowl, the Cotton Bowl. Well, now from Snoop Dogg, they're going to have the Snoop Bowl, the Snoop Bowl. How about that, Jane?
I think we're missing the obvious. Where's the Punch Bowl? Where's the Toilet Bowl? I think that there are other bowls that are being neglected.
I think it could maybe be the Snooper Bowl, though.
The Todd Albaugh Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Matt Nair on Air.
Dr. Karen Tamarius, she's a political psychiatrist, and we're talking about how to talk to people with which we do not agree.
Think of the mind as a rider on an elephant. The conscious part is the rider, and the emotional part is the elephant. If you want the person to change their mind, you need to talk with the elephant, not the rider.
Matt Nair on Air. Weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
And here's Heather with the weather.
Well, it's beautiful out there, sunny and 75, almost a little chilly in the shade. Now, let's get a read on the inside of your car. It is hot. You've only been parked a short time, and it's already 99 degrees in there. Let's not leave children in the back seat while running errands. It only takes a few minutes for their body temperatures to rise, and that could be fatal.
Cars get hot, fast, and can be deadly. Never leave a child in a car. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
You are never far away from your favorite radio station. We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. And if you missed your favorite show or game, listen to a podcast of it anytime on the app or our website, civicmedia.us. It's easy to listen to your favorite local radio station anytime. Download the Civic Media app from the Apple or Google Play Store, then listen live or whenever you want from anywhere for free.
Maggie Dawn.
Hey, everybody. It's Maggie Dawn here. Have a wonderful and safe Memorial Day weekend.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekday afternoons from 2 till 4.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
This is Amicus Law Review. This is our weekly weekend broadcast discussing all things law and government and rule of law related to the administration, the delivery of justice in our nation and beyond, talking as the first component of our syllabus on this busy weekend, this Memorial Day weekend, when we celebrate the good and important things about America, and especially the ultimate sacrifices made by our soldiers, women and men throughout our history to preserve the basic trappings of the rule of law and of justice and of the ways in which government should properly work. Their sacrifices, as we all well know, as we commemorate, as we celebrate this weekend, the legacy that they have given to us by virtue of laying down their lives, those kinds of things now implicated by the United States Supreme Court with people like Sam Alito, who express contempt for those very systems and express cynicism for the mechanisms by which government does indeed work. Talking about beginning with this story, these repetitive stories about flags being flown over his home in Alexandria and again on the coast, signaling plainly his support, his biased support for the notion that the 2020 election was stolen. We know that with respect to this second flag, the so-called appeal to heaven flag, it comes from a 17th century philosopher. His name is John Locke. You have all heard of him. He wrote of a responsibility to rebel, even to use violence, to overthrow unjust rule. It is a paraphrase for trial by arms. That is appeal to heaven. That's what's on this flag. It also has a tree on it. The main point is that there's no appeal, and there's no one else who can ask for help or judgment except creatures, visionaries, spiritual entities who are in heaven. That's the last thing we can hope for, is that there'll be a divine intervention, an appeal to heaven to stop what's going on here on earth. That's the notion behind the use of it now. Significantly, the appeal to heaven flag is one of three that is right now on display outside of the office of House Speaker Mike Johnson on Capitol Hill. And there it may be viewed as less offensive, less problematic, just because Mike Johnson is a political person. He's a political character, and he can express those views, but not from a Supreme Court justice who is supposed to be impartial, especially at a time when this particular Supreme Court justice, along with eight others, including the Chief Justice, is presiding over cases and is going to be issuing decisions in the coming weeks on issues related to the 2020 election and the legitimacy of prosecutions under it. A huge problem in terms of ethics and propriety and bias by our Supreme Court. So what has been the response to that? Well, there is public outrage, obviously, lots of editorials, lots of commentary about this. What has been our government response? Well, up to this point, again, Sam Alito has gone quiet on this after his initial statement that his wife was responsible for the upside-down flag in Alexandria. We have not yet heard from the Chief Justice, which is sort of the point, about the next development that happened late this past week, and that is that Richard Durbin, who is a senator from Illinois, he also happens to be the chair of the Senate Judiciary Committee. We've talked a lot about him in the past because he was one of these folks who, along with another senator named Sheldon Whitehouse, he's a senator also on the Senate Judiciary Committee, have been advocating for a combined and composite and compelling set of ethics, an ethics code for the Supreme Court, unsuccessful in getting that done. The Chief Justice, even in the midst of their advocacies across the parking lot in the Congress, issued an amalgam, if you will, of standards by which the Supreme Court is supposed to act, but not a code of ethics. Interestingly, though, that code of non-ethics, which the Supreme Court justice did, in fact, issue last year, does contemplate that this very kind of thing that we're talking about is forbidden. Among other things, that compendium principle says employees of the Supreme Court may not engage in nonpartisan political activity if the activity could reflect adversely on the dignity or impartiality of the court, or if it interferes with official duties. Hard to imagine a more clear violation of that standard, short of a code of ethics, but nonetheless articulated by the Supreme Court a number of months ago. Dick Durbin continues to advocate for that omnibus code of ethics that would prohibit this kind of thing and presumably would involve some sanctions if indeed you violate that code of ethics. Now, early on, after the first flag issue surfaced, through the New York Times. Dick Durbin said, you know what, I'm not inclined to do anything. I'm not inclined to have hearings. I'm not inclined to go down that road at all. When the second flag, the flag that again is appearing at the beach house along the Atlantic coast, when that second flag, the Appeal to Heaven flag, appeared, apparently he changed his perspective and said, no, we need to do something. And I would offer this morning, the something is fairly tepid. He writes a letter on May 23rd, late this past week, May 23rd, 2024, addresses it to the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. His name is John Roberts, as you well know, and describes, again, the facts, the news stories about these flags flying, and the fact that while these flags are flying, they indicate not only the positions, the political positions of the Associate Justice, Sam Alito, on these matters that are pending before him right now while he's on the court. But also goes on to say this: the rule of law is founded on elemental propositions, including the collection of evidence by investigators without an interest in the subject of investigation and the use in the investigation of statements whose falsity would be sanctionable. The rule of law is also founded on the ancient principle that no one is a judge in their own case. The letter goes on to say, for centuries, Supreme Court justices conducted themselves in such a way that the absence of proper procedures consistent with these principles was a moot failing. That is no longer true. The court's code of ethics has failed to address or prevent any of these ethics violations, again, identifying those of Associate Justice Sam Alito, largely because it contains no enforcement mechanism. Both the court and the judicial conference, that's the Judicial Conference of the United States Courts, appear to have failed to even investigate allegations of ethics violations by Supreme Court justices, much less provide any findings or sanctions. And here is the rub. This is the request that was issued by, again, Senator Whitehouse and also by the chair of the committee, Dick Durbin, just this past week, a letter written to the Chief Justice asking for this. Here's the ask. We therefore call for Justice Alito to recuse himself from certain proceedings as outlined above. Again, this is a four-page letter, lots and lots of information, predicate bases for this request. We renew our call for the Supreme Court to adopt an enforceable code of conduct, which they have not done, for all Supreme Court justices. And then we request a meeting with you as soon as possible. Until the court and the judicial conference take meaningful action to address this ongoing ethical crisis, we will continue our efforts to enact legislation to resolve this crisis. Again, the chair of the Senate Judiciary Committee calling upon the Chief Justice for the recusal of Associate Justice Sam Alito with respect to these cases that are pending in front of him, calling for an enforceable code of conduct, which also has not happened. The Chief Justice plainly not going down that road at all, and requesting a meeting. Let's sit down and let's talk about this. Well, it's a good first step with a very small G in line, but it's not enough. It plainly is not enough. What that meeting will look like, what it's supposed to be, what the accomplishment coming out of that meeting, it's unclear from the letter, but presumably some kind of discussion about these issues that are described as a crisis, and we're having a meeting about it in Washington, D.C., between branches of government that do indeed check and balance each other. That's what the Constitution is all about. And I would offer that as much as I support Senator Whitehouse and Senator Durbin for doing just this, it is not enough. And in the wake of all that has happened, especially in the wake of other things that this Associate Justice has said and done in recent years, it requires more than just recusal. Recusal is the lowest response to this possible. He's got to recuse himself. He should no longer be presiding over these cases. And the advocacy coming out of our weekend broadcast is that Sam Alito, because of his contempt not only for the systems that he has revealed in his writings, his conduct, and yes, in these flag displays of recent times, can no longer be on the Supreme Court. Let's talk about that. Let's talk about the reasons why I'm advocating for his resignation from the Supreme Court of the United States of America. Let's go back and talk about his contempt, not only for apparently the voting system, the polling system that produced the 2020 election results, a system that plainly he disregards, he feels is discredited. He has plainly indicated to that clearly and unequivocally, almost putting aside his conflict of interest. He has contempt for the very system that elected the present president of the United States of America. Presumably, other elections, past and perhaps future, coming up in just a few months from now. And by virtue of flying those flags, the upside-down United States flag and also the other flag outside of his beach home, he is indicating that the recent election was stolen. It's not to be credited. Do not believe that election. The voting, the elective process that produced the results that were announced by the Congress on January 6th resulted in the swearing-in of President Joe Biden on January 20th. None of that is to be believed because that vote was, in fact, stolen. That is what he is telling us by virtue of flying those flags, again, over and above the problem that he now has in presiding over cases in which that very issue is at stake. But there is more. Let's go back. Let's talk about other things that Associate Justice Sam Alito has said and done that also reflect this cynicism, this contempt, even this conspiracy view that he has about many things in American history. We know well that the Supreme Court has issued at least two other cases involving voting rights under the Voting Rights Act of the 1960s. One of those, of course, Shelby County, which basically eviscerated Section 4, Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act, a preclearance provision. And he also the Supreme Court issued on July 1 of 2021, a case called Brnovich. This is also kind of the companion case in voting rights litigation and decision-making of recent times. It had to do with a couple of statutes that were enacted by the Arizona legislature. One of those says that if you, in fact, you vote at the inappropriate place, your vote cannot be counted. The other one says that if your vote was a part of a gathering together of a number of votes before they were delivered to the people who count those votes, likewise, those votes can't be counted. And the Supreme Court in this case called Brnovich versus DNC found that under Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act, that those kinds of limitations, those restrictions on counting properly made votes can, in fact, survive the voting rights scrutiny. And so they proved that. And along the way, Sam Alito, writing in that case, again, back in July of 2021, articulated a number of standards for the legislatures, local municipalities, county, state, and federal legislatures to adopt, to follow, when it comes to deciding whether or not particular restrictions on voting can, in fact, be imposed. And he described five in particular, all of them suggesting that if, in fact, the impact upon voting is de minimis, if there are a few people, even groups of people who are disenfranchised, doesn't mean that much. He says the size of the burden imposed by a challenge voting rule is relevant. In other words, if it doesn't have much of an impact, doesn't matter all that much. He says the degree to which a voting rule departs from what it was standard practice, that also is maybe a relevant consideration, but also may not suggest that the voting restriction is inappropriate. He says the size of any disparities in a rule's impact on members of a racial or ethnic group, likewise, it's important. But if it's not significant, we can disregard that, too. And he also says that courts must consider the opportunities presented by the legislature, by the state generally, in the voting system. In other words, if there are many other things that enable voting, those two can overcome problems in voting. Finally, he says, and here's the rub, he says that the strength of the state interest served by a voting rule is also an important factor. And here is the language that expresses cynicism about fraud in our elections and suggests that he believes this is in the law, this is in the decision of the Supreme Court of a number of years ago that basically codifies for the first and, as far as I can tell, only time the notion that indeed fraud exists inside our voting systems. He says this: one strong and entirely legitimate state interest is the prevention of fraud. Fraud, he writes, can affect the outcome of a close election, and fraudulent votes dilute the right of citizens to cast ballots that carry appropriate weight. Fraud can also undermine public confidence in the fairness of elections and the perceived legitimacy of the announced outcome. I'm going to talk more about what that means and why, once again, it shows the cynicism of an associate justice about the very systems by which we vote in America as Amicus, a law review, continues here in the broadcast stations of Civic Media.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap Eau Claire, the Chippewa Valley's home for the Devil's Advocates radio show. The 988 Suicide and Crisis Lifeline is here and ready to help. Anyone can call or text 988 or chat via 988wisconsin.org to get connected to a trained Lifeline counselor. Trained counselors are here to support anyone experiencing a suicidal, mental health, or substance use crisis. You can also contact 988 if you are concerned about someone. 988 is confidential and free to all Wisconsin residents. 988, 24/7. Call, text, chat. Here to support you. Sponsored by the Wisconsin Department of Health Services.
Covering all the news that affects you with humor and a unique perspective. Matt and Air on Air with Jane Matt and Air. Weekdays 10 till noon on the Talk of Eau Claire, 93.5 The Tap, and on the Civic Media app.
Looking for a roundup of the day's important headlines in quick podcast format? Search no more. Find it now on the WCFW website at wcfw.fm. Your news just for the Eau Claire area. I'm James Kelly with WCFW News.
93.5 The Tap.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
This is Amicus Lawview. My name is Jim Santel, talking all about Sam Alito. Talking, yes, that's right, in very serious tones, very serious words about the cynicism and contempt of Associate Justice Sam Alito. Going back to this 2021 decision in Brnovich, a voting rights decision in which he codifies in the law of our nation, in this opinion of the majority of the Supreme Court written by Sam Alito, that fraud exists in our election processes. And for that reason, legislators who are responsible for ensuring that our votes, our voting system, our polling is proper and conducted in a way that's consistent with the law, they should be concerned about this fraud that is out there. Fraud can dilute the right of citizens to cast ballots. Fraud can undermine public confidence. And be careful about that fraud is what he's telling us. And he's codifying in that law of the United States of America. Brnovich is the law of our nation, something that has never been codified before. And as far as I can tell since then, that we should be concerned about something that doesn't exist. He is telling us, consistent with those flags flying over his homes, his beach home, and also his principal residence, that indeed elections in America are being stolen. And they're being stolen by people who are committing fraud, and that you need to be scared of it. And that, once again, is a basis for the advocacy for him to remove himself from the Supreme Court. The cynicism about our very election system, the polling system by which we elect our elected representatives, as established in Brnovich and in other ways, cannot be tolerated. And it indicates a bias far beyond just the flying of those flags and the specifics about the 2020 election. This is a Supreme Court justice in the top position in our judiciary saying that our elective systems are subject not only to review, which they can be, but are also rife with fraud. And for that reason, be careful about, be doubtful about, be suspicious about the results of our elections. That's what he is telling us in Brnovich. There's more. Let's talk about what he wrote more recently in June of 2022, just a couple of years ago, coming up on the anniversary, of course, of Dobbs versus Jackson Women's Health Organization. And here again, an awful lot of analysis that precedes this particular writing of his in the decision on behalf of the majority in Dobbs. He says that the right to abortion does not fall within the category set forth in the Constitution. We hold that Roe and Casey, which of course are the previous rulings in this area, that establish that indeed there's a privacy right. That the Constitution, he says, makes no reference to abortion. No such right is implicitly protected by any constitutional provision, including the one on which the defenders of Roe and Casey now chiefly rely, the Due Process Clause of the 14th Amendment. All of that, again, articulating a view that is contrary to what the Supreme Court had said for about 49 years up until that time. What he says, and the reason why this particular language that I'm about to recite is also so compelling, also expresses a contempt for the very court on which he sits. Way back when the decisions in Roe and Casey were decided by a Supreme Court, yes, that reviewed the status not only of medical treatments and conditions at that time, but also the status of the law. That was the decision of the Supreme Court. Here is what Here's what Sam Alito says more recently about the decision in Roe and also Case. He says Roe was egregiously wrong from the start. Its reasoning was exceptionally weak, and the decision has had damaging consequences. And far from bringing about a national settlement of the abortion issue, Roe and Casey, by the way, written in part by Sandra Day O'Connor, have inflamed debate and deepened division. It is time to heed the Constitution. That's what Sam Alito writes a couple of years ago, suggesting once again that his predecessors on the Supreme Court, with whom he disagrees, he can do that. Supreme Court justices and courts overrule these kinds of things all the time. But when he says that, he basically says that the Supreme Court is itself not legitimate. It is time to heed the Constitution, which plainly my predecessors on the court did not do. Roe was egregiously wrong from the start. They got it wrong. And now I'm here to correct that. I would offer to you that that is contempt for the very processes by which our courts are conducted and the legitimacy of the Supreme Court itself. And then there's more. And we have talked a bit about this. And this happens a month ago today. The Supreme Court entertaining argument on this immunity issue, on this all-important immunity issue, deciding whether or not a president can indeed commit crimes while he or one day she is in the White House. Here's what happens during the course of the oral argument on this case involving immunity. Justice Sam Alito suggests that there are not legal safeguards in place to protect presidents against malicious prosecution, absent some form of immunity. Okay, he's sparring with the other justices, at least three of them on the bench, maybe not all of his colleagues there. He tells the prosecutor, he tells the counsel, his name is Michael Dreeben for the Solicitor General, that the grand jury process doesn't work. The grand jury process in America does not work. It's not a protection, he says, because prosecutors and grand jurors, as Sam Alito is saying from the bench of the United States Supreme Court, can indict a ham sandwich. That's what the associate justice said from the bench of the United States Supreme Court a month ago. No respect for the grand jury process, which, again, is not, for what it's worth, it is not an entity of the executive branch. It is not an entity of the presidency. It's an entity of the courts. It's his own system. The grand jury system, not a protection, because a grand jury and prosecutors along with them, apparently also corrupt, can indict a ham sandwich, using that phrase that's way too overused. And when counsel for the government pushes back and says, no, grand jurors do their work in a competent and thoughtful and reasonable way, and it's his experience, as it has been mine for 30 years of my own work with grand jurors and other prosecutors, they often don't indict people who don't deserve it. Why? Because the facts aren't there, because the law isn't there. It happens all the time. Grand jurors do their jobs well. And what is the response from Associate Justice Sam Alito to that notion that he is wrong about the illegitimacy of the grand jury process, that jurors who are pulled from our public groups and our public populations do their jobs competently, as do prosecutors? His response is, well, dismissively, he says, every once in a while, there is an eclipse, too. Every so often, he says, maybe prosecutors, maybe grand jurors will get it right. That is contempt unbounded. That is cynicism for the very systems of government that he is required to uphold. That's the oath of office that he was mandated to uphold as a Supreme Court justice. Cynicism unbounded, in addition to the flags, in addition to these statements in Brnovich about how we've got fraud in our systems and legislators should be wary of that fraud. Americans should know that there is fraud in our elective politics and our elective systems, and they should know that the results of our elections are therefore compromised. The notion that the Supreme Court itself is not legitimate, and indeed that the grand jury process and prosecutors are corrupt. All of that a part of...
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap, Eau Claire, Chippewa Valley's home for the Todd Allball Show.
Civic Media. The Maggie Dawn Show.
One of the most prolific columnists in the Midwest, Mr. James Causey, one of your columns, you mentioned that you got into the news because of the news quiz.
Yes. I would like to be the first person picked. And so.
Yes. Getting picked first for the news quiz teams.
We need to bring that back, actually. I need to talk to my paper about bringing that back.
The Maggie Dawn Show. Weekdays from 2 till 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us. You're listening to 93.5 The Tap, WCFW HD2 Chippewa Falls, W228EP Eau Claire, and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.